Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. You don't have to be of a certain age to remember that some jobs traditionally have only been held by men. Until recently, the title of Fortune 500 CEO, or Vice President of the United States for that matter, were always held by men. Even today, only 8.2% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women. That's about a little more than 40 women. But women continue to make progress in jobs and careers that historically have only been held by the men. Well, on this International Women's Day, we talk about the progress and the work that still needs to be done. My guests are Dr. Kimberly Jones, Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Howard University, and Damali Harding, Director of Account Management with Oracle Energy and Water. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this critical issue, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Jones and Damali, thank you both for joining the conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Dr. Jones, I'm going to start with you, because even as I was kind of digging through the numbers, right now it seems that there are only two women of color who are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. That's two out of 500. And as I said, overall, only 40 women in that 500. Your thoughts about those numbers?
Well, I'm not surprised at those numbers. We have to do a much better job of recruiting women, of retaining women, of promoting women, and giving women the same opportunities that men have had for decades. And I think I'm so happy, and I want to just thank you and others for really just highlighting this issue and centering just kind of the role of women in STEM and in engineering. And so the numbers aren't surprising. We have to do better. I think the more we talk about it, the more we kind of put action behind those words, the farther we'll go and really, really turning up some of those numbers around. I mean, women are about 50% of the workforce. I think only 27% work in STEM fields, and in engineering, it goes down to 15%. So when you just kind of look at those numbers, this disproportionality really becomes much more clear.
You said something that's kind of struck me. You said, we have to do better. Who is we?
We means all of us. It means the men that traditionally hold those roles. Men have to be, I was on a panel earlier today, and someone brought up the issue of you know, what is the role of men in really changing those numbers. And so when I say we, I mean men, I mean women, I mean all of us. We have to work together to really even the playing field for women. We need men as allies. If there's a meeting or a conference, or it's time for, you know, to consider the folks who are about to be promoted, and you look around and every candidate is male, you need to question that, because we know that there are qualified women up for all of these roles, and we need to give women the same chances that men have.
You know, Damali, we often think about this issue in terms of high profile jobs and positions. And yet there are jobs and careers that your average Joe, average Jane have never, will never, ever hear about, that women are successful in, that are making entreaties in. You know, for example, you know, your job, Director of Account Management with Oracle Energy and Water. I'm a relatively well-educated person, but if you were to tell me, I would say, you do what?
I do a mix of strategy and account management. But I think, Harold, your point is well taken, in that a lot of times, you know, Kimberly talked about access to these jobs and promotions. So let's take something, you know, I work in energy. So you look at solar, you know, solar industry Association knows that there's a shortage of women out there being able to service solar panels, for example, and they're going out there recruiting, trying to diversify those fields. But it's a hard road because it is retention, it's understanding, it's looking at even bias. And when we talk about promotion, you know, there is studies that have been done that said women are biased in their performance reviews. You know, the language that's used when they go back and look, okay, well, who are we going to promote, and go back and look at that language, there's biases that exist in that language. And then you add on a layer, if you start talking about, you know, Black women, well, then you start having all the intersectionality of you're a woman, you know, you're Black, you're fighting these double roles. And unfortunately, in male-dominated fields, you know, it becomes very difficult. You know, women face higher instances of stress. They face higher instances of harassment. And so they, you know, you have to at some point, at what point do you prioritize your mental health over a paycheck, even in an industry that you might love?
You know, one of the things when you talk about high-profile women, and we have seen a considerable amount of movement, particularly when you're talking about professional sports. Earlier this year, Major League Baseball, the Miami Marlins, hired their first woman general manager. In the NFL, we have seen several women hired as assistant coaches. And certainly the numbers are small. These are the firsts, plural firsts. But the numbers are still small. Dr. Jones, why do you think that this is happening now? Is this a political thing? Because when you're talking about, for example, professional sports, the bottom line is performance and money.
I agree. I think the question of why now, that's a great question. I think there have, I mean, definitely we have to, and we said it earlier, you know, I have to, when you have a woman in the White House, you know, and our vice president being a woman of color, a Black woman, I think, you know, it really, you can't underestimate the impact of just representation and bringing awareness to certain issues and across different fields, you know, across, you know, whether it's sports or something like, you know, engineering or, you know, there are, I mean, As people begin to be more aware of the discrepancy and, you know, kind of these numbers, I think, you know, we have to hold them accountable and make sure they do a great job of recruiting women, hiring women, paying women the same as they pay men. And so your question of why it's happening now, I think it's about time, I guess I'll say. You know, I'm glad to see it happening now. I hope it continues. And I hope we continue to see those numbers of women in these non-traditional fields increase.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are observing International Women's Day, and we're talking about women who are making entries into jobs and careers that have historically, that have traditionally been held by men. Not only are they getting those jobs, but they're also excelling in those jobs. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So let's talk about when you go into the professional settings of these jobs. And I'll start with you, Damali. I would imagine that for you, a lot of times, you were the only woman in the room. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So what is that like? And talk to me about your first experience with that. What happened? How did you handle it? And when you look back on it, your thoughts about it?
I think it's having a very, very strong sense of self. So not only was I the only woman in the room, quite frequently I was also the youngest in the room, because you're talking about, in a lot of these industries, you know, people who are on the job, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. And so they're, expectation when you walk in is, well, you're not going to be able to teach me anything. You're not going to be able to show me anything. And so first it's overcoming that. Overcoming this, you know, why are you here? You're an interloper. And second, quite frankly, it's having the support. And so when Kimberly talked about the we, that is absolutely right. You need to have the support of the other men in the room. You need to have your supervisor support. You need to have, I knew if something happened that my supervisor would have my back, like that he would protect me. And then lastly, I think it's finding, you know, for me, I was able to find other women. So it's funny, today I actually was organizing a brunch for women in my industry, for Black women in my industry. And finding other women that who can help mentor you is critical to being able to have women go through the pipeline. You know, if we want to have more women Fortune 500 CEOs and more Black women, we need to have those women have access. We need to have people mentor those women, but not just men. It needs to be other women because we face different challenges, and that's just, we just do. But for me, I think it was the two things of having a very strong sense of self, and then quite frankly, also knowing where my boundaries are. One of the things I coach young women on is set your boundaries. You know, I have a very high tolerance for, you know, jokes and things like that. But there were certain lines that if you cross them, that was it. I'm not doing this for a paycheck. You know, not all money is good money. So making sure you know that up front. And being able to act on it, because too often we get involved and we get held hostage by, well, we should be there, or we get held hostage by, you know, what we believe is good money, and, you know, we have things to do. So,
And I would challenge you, Dr. Jones, on that same question. As an engineer, you've been to the Black Engineer of the Year Awards.
Yes.
Yeah. So and this is why I bring that up, because I've been there too, as a media person, not as an engineer. I can't count. Don't ask me to mix chemicals because I'll blow the room up. But but I've been there several times. And the thing that amazed me is that it remains, engineering remains a male dominated industry, and I was amazed that there were so few women, but the women that I met were incredible women. Talk to me about your experience and your observations, because the Black Engineer of the Year Awards, I mean, that, you know, that is an event with thousands of people in the industry, whether it be the military or private sector or government, where they have a lot of black people there, but still not a lot of women.
Yes, that's true. Engineering remains, as I said earlier, just woefully underrepresented with women, and I think that comes from a lot of places. I mean, if you get a group of female engineers in a room and you kind of ask us to tell our stories or how we got here, inevitably you hear women say things like, you know, they were discouraged from, you know, pursuing engineering. A lot of women will say they've been, you know, tried to be advised to, you know, maybe pursue a different career. And it's also just, In our society, these are these constructs, these ideas of what careers are more suited for a men and what careers are more suited to women. And we buy into that too much. And I mean, I'll say personally, you know, I was encouraged to pursue engineering by, you know, it just happened to be, when I was in high school, I wanted to be an artist. And then I said, okay, I'll be, you know, maybe an architect. And I was, one person said to me, you know, Kim, you're really good in math and science. Why don't you consider civil engineering? Because it's similar. You get to use your math and science. And I'll be honest, I don't have engineers in my family. I had never heard of engineering. I didn't really know what an engineer did. But after that conversation, I just decided, you know what, that sounds, I love the idea of being an engineer. I always like to build things and make things. And so that really changed the trajectory of my career. And
we think about that, it takes, we have to continue to expose these young girls to engineering. We need to encourage them, make them, you know, understand that they are absolutely as capable as men. And when you say, and you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, the women who tend to be successful in engineering are absolutely top quality, because those women, you better believe, have had to endure a lot of bias. I think Damali said it earlier, you know, we have to look at the bias that continues to endure in our industry. We have to look at, you know, all the barriers that are still there for women to be successful. So any woman who has broken through all those barriers and jumped over all the obstacles to be a successful engineer is an extremely well-qualified, tough-as-nails engineer. And so we have to make it not so difficult. You shouldn't have to, you know, go through all these very difficult, you know, endure all these comments and all these things to be a successful engineer. A lot of guys just, you know, it's a much easier road. And we have to really change that.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Omar calling from D.C. Hang on. We're going to talk to you next. On this International Women's Day, we are talking about women moving into those jobs and careers that have been traditionally held by men. They're not just surviving, they're thriving. If you have a comment or question, give us a call. We're going to take a break. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. More of this conversation and your phone calls after the break. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is International Women's Day, and tonight we are focusing on women who are moving into jobs and careers that have been traditionally held by men, how they are thriving in those positions, and the work that still needs to be done. My guests are Dr. Kimberly Jones, Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Howard University, and Damali Harding, Director of Account Management with Oracle Energy and Water. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Omar, thanks for hanging on, calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I just have two questions. The first one, can you guys elaborate on maternity laws right now? Are they different in each state, or there's just one universal law in regards to employment? And the second question, I was reading in the Wall Street Journal today that there's a record number in universities. There's more women in universities than men, especially African-American women. They have a very high enrollment in universities. Are we seeing that in the workforce?
I can ask either one of my guests to talk about those if they want to take a shot at it. Ladies, either one of you want to talk about that?
I didn't hear the first part of the question that clearly, but the second part of the question I think mentioned the percentage of women in universities. Is that the comment?
There is a very high number of women in universities right now. There are more women enrolled than men. And my question is, are we seeing that in the workforce? I mean, since almost 2000, there's been a record number of women enrolled in university. And that was an article in the Wall Street Journal that talked about that. My question, are you seeing that in the workforce?
Okay. I can say what we see in engineering is that even though we have a large percentage of women enrolled in universities, you're absolutely correct on that. We do see, and women make up about 50% of the workers in the workforce, but it's still underrepresented specifically in STEM and in engineering. But I think the other guest, Damali, probably has, I'll ask her to speak about her experience in her industry. I'm at a university. She's in an industry.
Yeah, so I think that when you start to look at women, again, graduating, like women are getting highly educated. And you're right, Black women are the most highly educated group in America. But traditionally what happens is we are steered into careers that are traditional women's careers. So we are steered into social work. We're steered into teachers, we're steered into human resources. And that's one of the challenges that we see when we talk about, you know, the pathway to Fortune 500 CEO is you need to run a P&L, right? You need to run a profit and loss. You need to run something that's going to make money for the company. And if we are steered as women into human resources, which is a very necessary and required function, unfortunately, that function does not lead to the C-suite, right? That function leads to, you know, maybe chief human resource officer, and that's where you kind of tap out. And so you are seeing women become educated, but what we're looking at is those industries, you know, such as energy, such as STEM, such as construction, such as transportation, that are still, you know, 70, 80, you know, depending on the industry and the location, percent men. And that's where we need women, right? That's where we need to start to diversify those from a women's perspective.
I think we lost him, but I want to thank him for that question. To his point, or the question that he was asking was about maternity leave. Well, federal employees have 12 weeks of paid family leave, and that could also uncover. Cover maternity leave and the like. He's specifically talking about the Federal Employee Paid Leave Act, and also there is the FMLA, the Family and Medical Leave Act, that was amended to going into effect after October of 2020. So
I would actually like to address that.
Sure, go ahead.
The biggest difference is that is, in general, unless you work for a big corporation, which 70% of the people in this country do not,
right,
that is unpaid leave. So mm-hmm. they are obligated to give you the leave. But as we saw with COVID, numerous people in this country cannot afford unpaid leave, and so they shorten it. And we have seen anecdotal, you know, I can't point to any surveys right now, but anecdotal evidence that when those women come back, you know, their job responsibilities are diminished, they're pushed out, they are treated differently than beforehand. And so what we are looking for is a universal paid leave standard, which I believe is what where California is pushing towards. But that is a requirement, especially for our communities, because our, again, COVID exposed everything, right? COVID exposed all the things that we knew that corporate America could no longer hide, and, you know, companies couldn't hide. And so we are looking for a paid leave for men and for women.
Across the board, not just federal government. Yeah, not just federal government employees.
Not just federal government employees, or if you work for a large tech company, that they're doing that to pay for you, to basically bribe you to stay anyway. So, yes.
Well, thank you for that. And I hope that he was listening, because that was an important question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Carol calling from Connecticut. Carol, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah. Financial services. I'm a financial advisor. I have an MBA. We still only have maybe 15% of the producers that are women, regardless of race or what have you. It's for whatever reason, we're not getting the women the way we should be. And women are excellent at this because we build relationships and we're trusted. And I've been told that many times, where they feel more comfortable with me than they would with a man. And we are the profit and loss people. We are the people that bring the income in. So I think a lot of it has to do with the hours. There are long hours in what we do. I'm on the road right now. I just went through Hartford, and I'm coming from the East Coast side of Connecticut right now, having met with clients. So I don't know if that's part of it, but I think it's time that, you know, women need to step up to the plate, that it's out there if you want it. More of us are willing to support you and say, come on, let's do it. We can do this. You know, just get out there and do it. And, you know, but you got to be willing to put those hours in.
Yeah.
You got to be willing to do it.
Dr. Jones, your thoughts about what Carol is sharing with us?
I think that, I would agree with Carol that, you know, there can be a lot of certain jobs, you know, the hours may be different that can, we know that despite some gains in this area, women tend to have the primary responsibilities at home for children. And that can be, again, one of those obstacles or barriers to kind of upward mobility. And I think that she mentioned women need to kind of step up to the plate. And I do think women have to try, but women also need the support of others in the workplace. We need the support of policies that allow women to be successful in a job based on their merit and their hard work, and not have women trying to make those hard decisions about, okay, do I sacrifice quality time with my children, or do I, you know, put in those long hours? That should not be a decision that women, you know, a woman would have to make, but it is. And I'll go back to the prior conversation about maternity leave. And even though, you know, that's a good example, even though on the books it may say, okay, you have, you know, 12 weeks family leave, or if a woman takes maternity leave, even though there may be a policy saying that she will not lose her job, it can still have a negative impact because of biases. I know, you know, women who've been advised to, you know, you shouldn't take your whole leave, or you'll, you know, you won't be able to get back into the, you know, the higher profile projects and things like that. So women, you know, women need to be supported. We need policies that don't force women to make a decision about, you know, family versus work. It should be family and work. We should be able to, you know, work along with our spouses, our partners, or alone, whatever the case may be, and raise children and do all the other important things we have in our lives in addition to being promoted at work and being able to work hard and being able to, you know, show what we can do at work. You know, we shouldn't have all these other things get in the way of us doing what we need to do and what we know we can do in the workplace.
You know, Damali, Carol was describing it or talking about women stepping up to the plate, and it sounds to me that Dr. Jones is describing that plate is being hidden by the powers that be, men. Talk to me about, you know, how do you step up to the plate when somebody is always snatching the plate from the table?
No, that's a great analogy. And I also have an MBA, and I have a number of friends in finance. I myself started out in consulting, which is another high intense field. And, you know, I think, again, Kimberly is right in that, you know, women are penalized. Men are not penalized when they take their paternity leave in the same way that women are. Women are viewed and hired and looked at and had discussions with their supervisors about, well, you can't afford to get pregnant right now because we have a big deal coming. Those are conversations that are not held with men, because fundamentally, you know, unfortunately, the majority of the child rearing perception's reality. So you can look at the numbers, and more men are stepping up and taking their paternity leave, but it's still traditionally falls to the women. And I know women that have, you know, again, in these high profile, high intense fields, have scheduled their pregnancies to be able to take advantage of either bonuses, downtime for deals. And so those are unfair decisions that we have to make that our male counterparts do not. And so I think we are trying to step up to the plate, but I think, again, the plate color changes. The plate color, we're told different things, and it's not the same plate. We're working off, you know, a broken plate that we've taped together with duct tape, and somebody else is...
Or Gorilla Glue.
Exactly. Right? And somebody else, and so it's, you know, it's great to say these things, but again, part of that, I mean, look at, like, forget the women. The whole finance industry literally had to change their culture because people were dying. Right. And so it took, we don't want to get to that point, right? We don't want to get to the point of where they have to say, well, we can't kill people anymore, like, unfortunately, before we change our culture. Like, we are telling you that you are losing women, and quite frankly, you're starting to lose men because you're not offering cultures that work within the confines of family structures, right? Yeah, people have nanny shares. We have all these, you know, people who are privileged enough to have that. But what my concern is what about the women that don't, right? You know, we see in these male-dominated industries where women join, they start off, you know, you start off as entry level, and they get pushed out because who is advocating for them? Who is, you know, supporting them as they make their journey through? And they have to fight through five levels of, you know, these people attacking their credentials, attacking, do you know this? Well, do you even know how to calculate this? Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we get to at that point.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for your thank question. You so I thank you for your time. You know, one of the other issues that I think really needs to be, you know, spoken about is how things have changed. And the reason that I bring this up because my phone has really been kind of blowing up when it comes to this issue. One of my friends just sent me a text, and she says, high-ranking women are the hardest people to work for, their egos, trying to prove something. Now, my response was, I disagree, and I say my best bosses have been women. This is the context for me. When I started in the news business back in the mid-80s, there were very, very few women news directors. You just did not, you didn't see them. They weren't around. But in all of the decades that I've been doing this, I have had great men as news directors, and I've also had great women as news directors. I will also say that I've had a couple of horrible male news directors and at least one woman news director, and the news director for WHUR is someone that I count in the number among the great ones. So what do you believe, and I know you're not in this business, but from the perspective of a woman who is in leadership, and this is for both of you, what do women bring to a leadership position that may not have traditionally been a woman's job or career? And obviously, this is completely subjective. But Damali, please, I'll let you start with that.
I'm so glad you did. So I will start by saying that this country has done a horrible, horrible, horrible job of training people to be leaders and managers. There's an innate expectation that you get promoted, but very rarely do companies offer training around that promotion in terms of leading people, exciting people, developing teams. How do you bring out the best in people? And, you know, there's the adage that says people quit people, not jobs. And we're seeing that with the Great Resignation. I mean, you're seeing people say, well, come work for me, and I'm awful, and I'm not going to pay you, but you need this job. So I think there's that. But I think, you know, one of the things that actually one of the callers said earlier is that women do bring relationship building. We bring consensus building. We bring all of the, quote, you know, feminine skills. We bring listening skills. We bring diplomatic skills. And so I think, you know, people are people. So these are all broad generalizations.
Right.
But one of the things I do want to point out is that it has been shown, study after study, that when you put women on boards, and three is the magic number, your company makes more money, right? Regardless of industry, regardless of time, just simply putting three women on your corporate board, your company will make more money. And that's for a variety of reasons, but let's start, you know, going back to diversification of the employee base and your leadership base. if we're a for-profit company, works, right? We've seen the studies. And so by not promoting women, by not creating cultures of where women can excel at the things that they typically excel at, we're leaving money on the table and we're leaving opportunities on the table for our company's growth and long-term viability.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jones, the same for you, because you did chair your department for some 12 years, and I think you bring a particular, a particularly interesting perspective from the perspective of being a manager in academe.
Absolutely, and I will note that I'm always proud of this statistic, but I chaired the department for 12 years, and when I chaired the department, we had 55% of our faculty members were women, which is unheard of. I keep saying I'm going to look this up, but I think that may be a record in civil engineering faculty members, because the numbers are usually much, much lower. And we also have a very high percentage of women, female students in our undergraduate population. So I do think it's important when you're a leader who's a woman that you support other women, that you make sure, you know, once you, you know, rise to a position of leadership, that you really try to do that job of mentoring. I think Damali said earlier, you know, mentoring women, mentoring in general, but also making sure that women get a fair shake at mentoring so that they can understand, you know, what things to expect and what they should look for as they are building their career and as they're, you know, kind of thinking about what their career might look like in the future. I do think women in leadership positions have to really make sure they're preparing early career, you know, women to be successful. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us in leadership positions to do that. And in terms of, you know, what qualities might women bring, I think one, I will echo Damali's comment that diverse teams are just more successful. And so, again, I'll go back to my, you know, if you're at a table and you're trying to do something innovative or creative, and that table is not diverse, it's a homogeneous table where you see all men, you see all, you know, white men, or you see all of, you know, one demographic, you should know right away that's a problem. And you are not going to be as successful as you would be if you invited some women to sit at that table, if you invited some African-Americans or Latinos or indigenous people to sit at that table. And so the more we can diversify our teams and our workforce and our companies and on all levels, not just entry level, we have to start looking all through the company. Our topic right now, I guess, is leadership. And when you look at hiring, we get a lot of companies to contact us, you know, at Howard. You know, we're known for graduating very high quality, you know, graduates. Our engineers go on to do fantastic things. They're exceptionally well qualified. But, you know, we start to ask these companies, you know, how are you going to support these young people when they come to work for you? Are you going to mentor them? Will they be able to get to the next step in your company? You know, you want to hire these black women. Are they going to leave after a year because they aren't, you know, supported? You know, so we really have to start to hold our industry accountable for supporting women, supporting, you know, underrepresented groups so that they have the tools they need to succeed. Because, like I said, everyone is beginning to get the message that, you know, diversity is so important to the bottom line, not just, oh, it's the right thing to do. It is so important to the bottom line, and companies do grow as they become more diverse. So we do have to start, you know, really looking at that to make sure not only are you hiring at the entry level, you know, women, are they being promoted at the same rate as the men?
But let me say this. I agree with everything you said. And yet there is still the struggle. Just yesterday, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and the D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti made the announcement that they are joining the 30 by 30 initiative. 30% women police officers in the Metropolitan Police Department by 2030. This is a national initiative. The national average of women in police departments across the country is at 12%. In the District of Columbia, there are 23 their women staff, not only officers, but administrative staff combined, 23%. And yet, with those high numbers, almost twice the national average, the department is still facing multiple suits of discrimination against women. So even with, and just using that, you know, as an example, bringing women on board, this, I would argue, isn't just about doing it because it's the right thing, but dare I say, some organizations need lessons. Am I overstepping here, Damali? Do some organizations need a kick in the butt to understand how to operate within that diverse space because they perhaps haven't done it before?
Yes, I will probably say it a little more forcefully than you did.
Oh, okay. I thought I was, I was trying to be nice. I don't know. But
but one of the lessons that, again, going back to my old, you know, management consulting days, is culture trumps everything, right? You know, regardless of what your intentions are, if you have a culture that allows for harassment of employees, if you have a culture that diminishes the accomplishments of women, if you have a culture that does not have people challenge their own internal biases, then it doesn't matter, you know, how much lipstick you put on the pig, it's still a pig. And fundamentally, one of the things that we are looking for, and when we talk about, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, we talk about cultural changes. And it's funny, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine of how companies want all this great D&I. You know, they want, you know, 15% black people and 50% women, but they don't want to do the actual fundamental work of addressing the underlying cultural reasons why people leave. So, you know, for example, Dr. Jones talked about companies recruiting at Howard, and I remember reading some of the articles and some of the, you know, anecdotes that they were talking about. You know, we don't party and engage socially like our other counterparts, right? We may, you know, we have other ways that we engage. And so your culture has to not penalize people because they're not part of the norm. Or your culture also cannot be so toxic that either people leave or they have to join in the toxic. You know, you can't just start kicking people because that's what we do. And so that's absolutely correct, is that you have to be willing to do the work to let go of, quote, tradition, you know, that, well, it's always been done that way, and we've always done it this way, and it's worked for us for years, and why won't it work for you? To really start to see the benefits of having a police force of 30% women. Otherwise, it's just lip service.
Yeah. Dr. Jones, should men be worried?
Should men be worried?
Mm-hmm.
I would say no. I don't think men should be.
I know you weren't ready for that one, right?
Did I hear you? No, I think men should be joyful and men should look forward to working arm in arm with women. I mean, you know, I want to highlight something that Damali said that I absolutely agree with, and that's, and you mentioned it in your introduction to this piece we're talking about right now. If we don't allow women to enter into whatever, you know, these non-traditional fields, and I hope one day we won't have any non-traditional fields for women, but today we do. So as women enter these fields, we do have to make it allow them to bring their whole selves. A lot of times when you're a woman working in a male-dominated field, for example, you feel like you have to kind of change yourself to be more accepted. You know, I know women who, you know, do all sorts of things, like wear you know, darker colors. They don't want to stand out too much, or they, you know, try to mute their, you know, jewelry, or, you know, they try to change themselves so that they fit in and they don't want to stand out. And they may, you know, I've just heard you'd be, well, maybe you wouldn't be surprised at just the things that some women feel they need to do in order to be accepted in their industry and to be, you know, not dismissed as, oh, you know, as a woman, she's not serious or she doesn't, you know, we're fighting against those, that bias. And so when you step into a workplace and you're stepping in beside, you know, a guy, he gets to just go and be who he is and let's go get beer, a beer with the fellas on Thursday night and, you know, whatever he wants to do. And you look at this woman who's entering the same place just as qualified, but she has all these other, when I step in a room, okay, do I need to lower my voice? Let me make sure I'm, you know, not dressed in any way that would bring attention. And am I, you know, let me just think twice about what I say so I'm not, you know, and all that is extra energy and it can begin to wear on a person. And that should not be the woman's burden to bear. Companies need to understand these things. They need to understand unconscious bias. They need to actively create a culture that is inclusive so these women don't have to kind of hide who they are to go and just be fulfilled and happy at work.
Well, I think that now is the time to allow women to come in and succeed or fail, because men have been allowed to come in and succeed or fail. It's time to just open the door and let's see what happens. Dr. Kimberly Jones, Damali Harding, thank you so much for talking to us. Happy International Women's Day. That is
thank you for having us.
Sure thing.
Thank
that is you. The Daily Drum for this Tuesday, March 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.